Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is David Rubenstein. He is the author of the brand new book, How to Lead, Wisdom from the World's Greatest CEOs, Founders, and Game Changers. David is a patriotic philanthropist. He's also co-founder of the Carlyle Group and himself a visionary. But David, you know, you're a leader and you've put this book together, which is a collection of interviews that you've done with various leaders throughout the world in different categories. But I got to thinking as I sat reading the interviews that you had asked these people in the book, would you feel comfortable being asked the same questions and feel comfortable sharing as much as these folks shared for the interviews that became this book?
Sure.
What do you think inspires leaders to want to share that information? I mean, you could keep it to yourself and closely held to the vest, but why do people want to share?
I think there's a general sense people have that they want to make civilization better. It's just not about themselves, but helping other people. And if you give information about yourself, it might inspire other people to do things that are as good, if not better, than what you've done. So I think that's a natural human phenomenon to try to want to help other people.
Who was your original audience for these interviews?
It depended. Sometimes they were Bloomberg TV shows. Sometimes they were National Book Festival award presentations. They were a variety of different audiences.
As you asked the questions and as you came up with the ideas for where you wanted the interview to go, did you just have in mind yourself? Did you have your particular audience in mind? Or what drew you to the particular topics you covered?
Well, I'm looking for people who are willing to talk about themselves, and the people that I interviewed are people that I generally knew, so they were willing to open up. As you probably know, when you're doing an interview of somebody, if you know them a bit, they tend to be a little bit more responsive and a little bit more frank, and getting people to be frank about what they've done, the good and the bad, is a good thing to do in an interview. And I like to have people talk about the mistakes they've made, what they've learned, because that can inspire younger people to realize that if you make a mistake, you can pick yourself up and get back in the game. You don't have to just say life is over if you've made a mistake.
As you put the book together, in the introduction, you go through and you list 13 things that you think contribute to what makes a good leader. I mean, we're talking about everything from responding to crises, credit sharing, ability to keep learning, those things. When you came up with that list, is that a list that you had in mind or was that developed after talking to people?
I did the interviews and then I wrote the introduction afterwards. So it came about as a result of the interviews, but these are not things that are probably surprises to people, things like sharing the credit with people or being ethical. Those are probably obvious in many ways, but I try to distill them, you know, the key 13 down to the essence and try to get people to read the qualities that I think are most important. No one person could be perfect in all 13 qualities. But the most important thing I said at the beginning was luck. You need to have some luck if you're going to be a leader.
That's one of the things that I did take away from this, is there is a lot of luck involved and a lot of timing. You shared a story, I don't remember if it was actually during your interview, but or maybe in the introduction to the one with Jeff Bezos, about when the Carlyle Group, you called it your worst business decision ever. Can you share that story?
Yes, we helped Jeff get off the ground by providing a bibliography of books in print. He wanted to offer us a large piece of the company in return. We said, no, we want cash. And, of course, I later realized we should have taken equity and went out to get some equity instead when I wanted to change the deal. And he said he didn't need me as much, but he did give us some equity in the company, smaller than he would have otherwise given. And then later, as soon as the company went public, we sold it. Today, that stock is probably worth actually about $10 billion. So we made a mistake.
You know, as I think about leadership and as I talk to people, it seems like when we talk about leaders, people automatically go to the president. They think of government leaders. Why do you think people are so in tune to that now? When you think of leaders, I mean, you don't think of Lorne Michaels doesn't come to mind. You don't think of Condoleezza Rice, but they all qualify.
Well, president of the United States gets the most attention because he or she, eventually it'll be a she, are the people that get the most attention and they have the greatest responsibility. But they're leaders throughout all of society, the leaders at your radio station, leaders at your television station, leaders all over the country in different categories and so forth. Lorne Michaels is a person who's led Saturday Night Live for 40 years. He's a leader in that respect. So leaders come in all different types of categories. The president gets the most attention for sure. But my point to some extent is that you should look at people who are not just presidents of the United States, because other people are really doing good things for society as well.
In Bezos' interview, he pointed out that when he bought the Washington Post, he wasn't a newspaper guy and initially didn't want to do it. And it got me thinking, as I look at the leaders from that you have talked to in here, for instance, Eric Schmidt from Google, could those leaders translate into other areas? I mean, could Eric Schmidt be a good president, or could Lorne Michaels be a good president with the leadership skills they have, or are these particular to their particular industry that they've found?
Well, sometimes people can do things in different areas, but I think generally you get to be specialized as you get older, past the age of 40, and you're kind of narrowly focused on a certain area. It's not impossible that somebody that's a great university president could become a great political person. That's happened. Or somebody that's been a great business person could become a great cabinet secretary. So it can happen, but they use the same leadership skills typically. After the age of 40, you're reasonably fully formed.
You have an interview in here with Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is now a household name since 2020 began. Was the decision to include him in this book, would he have made the book had it not been for 2020 playing out the way it has?
Well, I interviewed him before the book for some other things, and he's a friend of mine, so I've known him for a long time, but there's no doubt that when the crisis came about, I went back and re-interviewed him, and so I put an earlier interview in and then a later interview, the only one in the book that has two interviews.
We're talking with David Rubenstein about his new book, How to Lead, Wisdom from the World's Greatest CEOs, Founders, and Game Changers. The book is a collection of interviews with lots of different leaders in this country, and it's broken up through different categories. David, as you put the book together and you look back, did you find yourself, do you learn something every time you read these interviews or go back and look at the videos?
Sure. I often say to myself, why didn't I do something like this when I was younger? I wish I had done what this person had done, and maybe I would have been more successful in my own life. You know, when you get to be a certain age, you realize you probably can't go change your life all that dramatically. But it is interesting to learn what people did and when they faced roadblocks in their career, and it's an enjoyable way to read about how people overcame handicaps and disadvantages, and it can hopefully inspire younger people to want to do the same.
One of the things I've noticed that a lot of the leaders have been fired, sometimes multiple times from jobs. I mean, Oprah Winfrey, one of the most successful media moguls of our time, she was at least demoted when she was in Baltimore, and you were familiar with her story because you knew the area. But what is it about being fired that, I mean, when people get fired, it's usually a very devastating thing, but what makes these particular folks pick up their cross or whatever they're bearing and try to make something better of themselves when so many people, when they're fired, it's just the end of their world?
Of course, if you get fired, and everybody has had some bad experience probably in their career, you can tend to mope around and just say, woe is me. But they're really great people, pick themselves up, they learn from what they might have done wrong, and they go forward. So virtually everybody in the book has had some failures in their career, and I certainly have had as well. And, you know, those people that get lucky can overcome those. And I'm trying to inspire people to say, if you get a bad situation in your life, don't just mope around forever. Go back into the fray. Stay back. Stay in the arena. Do something about it, and you can overcome these mistakes.
What type of research and preparation goes into putting together one of these interviews? Because you aren't a golfer, but you interviewed Jack Nicklaus as if you were, because you knew a lot about it.
Well, he'd written an autobiography, so I read that. And then what I tend to do is I read any book that the person I'm interviewing has written, or has had written for him. In some cases, they're ghostwritten. And then I also read most recent articles that have been come out about them. So I do a lot of research, and then I plan the questions in advance. So I kind of outline what I want to ask, and it works that well. I don't think that I'm a professional interviewer like you. I mean, I don't do this for a living, but I try to learn how to do it the way, you know, you obviously learn how to do it over a period of time. So I try to do preparation. As Jim Baker said, prior preparation prevents poor performance.
Were you ever intimidated by any of your interview subjects, either for this or any of the other interviews you've done?
When I was younger, I was intimidated. I worked as a young man in the White House, so when you're working at the President of the United States and you're 27, it can be intimidating. But as I've gotten older and I've seen up close a lot of great leaders, and I know their frailties and their weaknesses and their concerns, I'm probably less intimidated than I probably used to be, but maybe I should be more intimidated. But I don't think I'm as intimidated as I was when I was much younger, no.
I think one of the most interesting interviews I read here was with Richard Branson from Virgin, and you get into the deep background with him of how the name Virgin came about and all that. But Richard Branson is a guy that really just doesn't think about making a profit. That seemed to be a theme, but he just realizes that if something's successful, it will eventually make a profit. And that seems like a really high-minded thing to think about, because a lot of people think, well, this would be a good idea, but there's no way to make money in it, and then that's where it stops. So what is it about Branson that makes him go ahead and take that leap? Is it the fact that he's already got money?
Well, Branson was dyslexic and is dyslexic, and he dropped out of high school at 15, and he started a company, and it took off. And if you start a company, it takes off relatively early in your life, you'll have a fair amount of self-confidence. So his view is, if I can get an idea, I like the idea, I'll pursue the company, and some of them will make money and some won't, but ultimately the better ones will outlast and outshine the ones that don't. So he started more than 500 companies with the Virgin name. Some have not done well, but some have done extremely well. So he has a lot of courage.
You interview various politicians, President George W. Bush for one, and you know Nancy Pelosi, those types of folks. But when you talk to politicians, it seems like when we hear politicians talk, or even in interviews, the answers are so canned. As I read them in the book, it seemed like it got more personal. So what's your trick to, when you interview these folks, to get them off of the script and to get them into what they really think?
Of course, when I interviewed George Bush and Bill Clinton together, they had been former presidents, so they weren't really in the political world so much, so they can probably be a little bit more candid. Nancy Pelosi was still Speaker of the House, and it is now, but I've known her for a long time. We're both from Baltimore, so I think she was willing to open up. What you have to do is get people comfortable, make them comfortable with you, and let them talk about their early life and things that are not just business-oriented, and they will kind of, I would say, be more candid at some point in a conversation.
You interviewed both Bill and Melinda Gates, and they have the famous foundation. Would either one of them be able to do that foundation without the other, or is that truly a joint effort?
They really do have an incredible marriage, and it's a marriage where they both have had, like all marriages, they've had some disagreements from time to time, as she talks about in her book. But in the end, they each have divided up the world in one way or another, so they each they're not working on the same project, so they each have their own area of expertise. And she's focused a lot more on women's health issues than Bill is. But it's an incredible marriage, and it's a partnership they put together, and I think everybody would like to have a marriage like that.
You've interviewed so many people who are household names. Is there anybody that you just haven't been able to get?
Well, I'm trying to get the Pope right now. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, but that's one that I'm working on, and I hope to be able to interview the new President of the United States in the not-too-distant future.
All right. The book is How to Lead, Wisdom from the World's Greatest CEOs, Founders, and Game Changers by David M. Rubenstein. It is available now wherever books are sold. David, fantastic offering. I learned so much from it, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. That's what I-